Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 3, 2, 1. Testing mic 1, testing mic 1. Testing mic 2. Testing mic 3. Testing mic 4, testing mic 4. Testing mic 5, testing mic 5. Testing mic 6, testing mic 6. Testing mic 7, testing mic 7. Testing mic 8, testing mic 8.
Way out here in the right field.
Morning, and if you stand with me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Here.
Councilwoman Hancock.
Here.
Councilman Quinn.
Here.
Councilwoman Rich. Councilman Christopher. Mayor Mueller.
Here.
City Manager Matt Brown.
Here.
Four board members, Chair Zanetti.
Here.
Vice Chair Popper.
Here.
Four board member Porter.
Here.
Four board member Jane.
Here.
Officials who did not, and who are here that we didn't call your name. Just want to make sure you're on the record.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Jimmy, we'll turn it over to you.
Thank you.
board members, I mean, I guess, are you all interested in doing a update here since they're suspended? We took the position that since they were suspended, we weren't going to worry about it, and then once we move forward or whatever, then we would worry about updating, but I guess.
It doesn't make any point then.
Sounds like that's the direction we need.
The next week is the Ministry of Commerce. In a nutshell, the board said that the money collection impacting food needs to be spent within 6 years of collection. We bring that to your attention because since the impact fees were adopted, I don't think that we need to collect the profit. A little bit more than $11 million. To date, there's still approximately $5 million, not in number of spent. Preliminary information we received from the food board indicates that that six years, 2017. So we're bringing to your attention, we have a couple of options. One is to amend the ordinance if necessary, or get that one, amend the ordinance to change that 6 year requirement. Once we do that 6 year requirement, the ordinance requires that the money be returned to each payment. So we're going to bring that to your attention, and the attention of staff will possibly monitor this.
And those funds are strictly used for capital improvement?
Yes.
Okay, and would that be capital improvement for leasing facilities already?
You've got to show this, because the results are up. So it's a fairly restrictive. We prefer the first plan, I think we're okay at the moment, but if we get started to do that, that's what we might have.
And we have to, that's another way that we're trying to get to the food board presentation, we see that in some areas, the food
Jimmy, when's the deadline for doing that, or is, I mean, where are we at as far?
Well, basically, as I said, preliminary information from the food board indicates that approximately
No, what's the 60 month then? What's where are we at?
6 year reset for that.
Oh, okay.
That's not the motivation for collecting money. It's really a small amount compared to the previous amount. So we are into the second year of collection, so sometimes in 12 we've got the first amount that's going to be coming out. We are looking though for
maybe I was thinking that it was about $6 million that we needed to designate by 2017. Do you recall that was the target number?
David, but what you're saying, David, is you have to, $5.5 million, $6 million balance, that's a rolling balance from each of these years, so it's not necessarily met. It got up against the 72 month or the six year deadline, a 6 year number.
I guess that's what I
expressed
in reference to what I knew. Whatever we collected in that year,
Jimmy, who's gonna, you're gonna monitor that, or Dave's gonna monitor that, or who's, I mean, huh? Okay, I mean, because I don't have a problem with y'all with sending that. I mean,
we'll
collect
it if we
can. Okay.
And I've done a little bit of research.
bit of that timeline so that we can spend the money when we need to spend it versus spending this money in some arbitrary way if we don't, you know, trying to meet some goal or spend so much money per year if we don't really need to for school sites. I mean, I think it'd be just as easy to get rid of that timeline and then when growth does come back or if we do need it, can we use that money when we need it?
Let the record reflect that Ms. Ritz from the City of Ocala has joined us.
Good morning.
Mr. Minter, our legal counsel for the county is here as well.
Will you bring us back a report on that?
Yes.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is the special service barrier amendment. If you were able to recall, with the requirement for the public school facility building, we were required to set up currency. We had targeted August 30th of this year to update those terms of service area. As we get into the service session, one of the results of the recent legislative changes was to not require a public school for social development and not require concurrence as it relates to students. So, as we go through the discussion, the first elaborate on what
this is an example of what we have in the interlocal agreement for concurrency service areas. What we did in concurrency agreement was to anticipate the time when the statute then that the task was going to provide a 6 year, you had to go to do less than 55. And so what we did was that meant the letter of the law wasn't particularly effective because the students of the requirements to have the service area that if you have a development proposed in one portion, one area, say purple area, and there's not enough capacity in those schools, then you need to go to the adjacent service area and look. And if there's capacity there, then there would be no charges with that, and you just
how's this? Good.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Dave Herlihy, Marion County Public Schools, Grove Planning and Governmental Relations Manager. I forget who I am. This morning, I'll get myself oriented here just a moment and show you some enrollment and development information. This is data. Anybody that's new, hasn't seen me do this before, those of you who have been here, see me, I've run through numbers. And what I want to do is just kind of show you a trend, what's been going on the past 5 years, 4 to 5 years, with enrollment and development. It's a big picture. We all know it's a big county. The development is very dispersed, and I'm finding this year in particular that it's very difficult to find any real discernible patterns in the data. So I'll go through it, see if there are any questions. I understand that there are a lot of perplexed faces out there. I know why, because as I look at it, I kind of find the same thing. I'm just going to zoom on this for a moment because it is sort of small. Show you walking through this, and pretty much any of these numbers, they are shown in the graph below, but I think you can notice that the overall trend, these are the actual numbers that are plotted on the graph below, the overall trend is down for elementary, pink is middle school, the yellow is high school. It's not down extremely, but it's down, I'd say flat to down. You know, it's just kind of bouncing along somewhere just about flat and down a little bit. In the middle at the top, what I'm showing you here are the relative proportions or shares. So to go through in the year 08-09, the school year 08-09, 47.6% of all the students enrolled were elementary. 23.3 were middle, and 29.1 was high school. I just think it's worth noting that shows you if there's a shift in the demographics, that is the number of kids, the ages, which level of school they're going to. And so I've been tracking that, and you see that, I mean, it went down, and then we're back up to 48.1. So there's supposedly a little bit of a baby boomlet that occurred, I believe, in 2006. Those children are showing up now as either pre-K or kindergartners. So I'm thinking that may be what's going on. This is just net change in this table at the top right. You can see that, you know, since for the most part, they're pretty well flat, less than a percent, or they're either negative or less than a whole percent. So I'm just going to move on from that unless there are any questions. That's just sort of a summary, but again, flat to downtrend. Okay, Exhibit B. This is comparing enrollment. Last year, our 120th day enrollment. This is the day that we've written into the interlocal agreement where we'll make our observations and compare to our Florida inventory of schoolhouses, FISH, or that's the permanent capacity of our facilities. And per the legislation, this indicates capacity that's existing on the ground, the actual built brick and mortar capacity, not portables, and it includes any capacity projects funded in the work program. We've built everything that we had in our work program, and the only thing that is in this year's work program that's not built yet that is included in these numbers would be Elementary School V, and that's in Unit 25 of the Shores, and we'll touch on that a little bit later in the agenda. So the most striking thing I could say to y'all about this is that our level of service, or what DOE phrases or terms, utilization, is almost 91% for elementary, 79% for middle and 84 for high school. So in short, we have a substantial amount of capacity available. Yes. Sure. Actually, I'm about done. We could do that now. There's. Just. We don't do that. I believe there is a way to do it, probably not to the full extent that you've suggested. We can monitor year to year who's coming back as to whether they've gone to the private schools. I don't know if we have, I don't have a rapport built that, you know, we could identify those children. Wipe the egg off my face and go. I've learned today.
David, can I ask you a question? What about virtual school? Is there a trend towards virtual school?
So back to the ESC
example. Yeah.
Right. So this is just a strict reading or the strict math on the numbers. What Mrs. Zanetti is mentioning is that the actual operational capacity of our schools is different and oftentimes can be considerably, I want to get this right, it would effectively push the level of service or the utilization higher. An example, and steer me if I misspeak here, an example is we may have classrooms that in an elementary school could accommodate 18 elementary school students, but we may be needing to use that for ESC children, and so those ESC children may be only 5 to an instructor or 10 to an instructor, so you're getting a net loss. If it's 5 to an instructor, you're getting a net loss of 13 spaces or 13 seats of capacity in that room. And I think it's a relatively fluid situation. In some instances, we do have ESE centers where it's more predictable and the numbers are reduced correspondingly because we have an ESE center, say like Maplewood. So does that cover? Okay. Okay. This is capital outlay full-time enrollment. These are the forecast numbers that DOE sends us each year. These are the numbers of students that they're projecting or forecasting, and the school district has to prepare its work program based on these numbers. So we may have our own numbers and our own thoughts about what our enrollment, our future enrollment may be for the next 5 years and further out. But these are what we have to use per the state and per the legislation in preparing our work program. Again, here, much like my opening slide, I just wanted to show you that here's a difference. The solid line is last year. The dashed lines are this year. And so last year we were expecting, you know, looking out 10 years into the future, a bit of an increase in elementary school students over time, with middle school being, you know, having a belly in it and then increasing after about 5 years or so. Likewise, high school, we were anticipating it would be relatively flat. Now those things have changed, and everything's just either flat or down when they're looking out 10 years. So what this does to us in terms of our long-range planning is it causes me to think, well, if they can change this much from year to year, what I've recommended to the school board is that we keep our own plans based on the actual enrollment numbers that we have, and we look to have future capacities that we would accommodate. And a tie on that is the impact fees and spending money to purchase future school sites. Any questions on this? All right. Now, if you thought those first couple of slides were really exciting, this one will really be. What I've got here is elementary, middle, and high school. And they're all the same sort of information. With a mapping software I have, I'm able to look at our attendance areas and identify the number of 0.2 or 1/5 of an acre lots to 5 acre lots. I've used this in years past. I've presented it to you all at this meeting. And my assumption there is that the 1/5 of an acre lot up to the 5 acre lots seem reasonable, that somebody could just wander in and pull a building permit on it. They're not, a 5 acre lot's not necessarily going to be further subdivided, doesn't seem likely. And so with that being the case, building permits could show up relatively quickly. What I've done is to look at the past 4 years from 7 to 10 over here, for the existing development, but at this point in time, in April of 11, I identified the number of developed lots on an attendance area by attendance area basis, the number of undeveloped lots, the total, and then calculated a percentage of the development. Many, many variables, as I mentioned, go on with the school attendance areas. Sometimes they're very big, it's a rural area, there's not a lot of development in it, there's not many lots in it. Other times it's a very small attendance area, it's mature, it's an older area, pretty well developed or built out. So after taking all those aspects into consideration, the best I can come up with looking at these numbers is that in the middle of the chart, under the residential developed from 2007 to 2010, and the right side, quantity as a percent of existing developed, this is looking at the quantity that was built and then taking it as a percentage of the existing developed over in the far left column. So at Saddlewood Elementary, over the 4 year period, we had 393 residential units developed. That was 20.5% of all the residential units in that area to date. So the way I see this is a measure of how quickly recent development has happened in that area. We saw the pressure on Saddlewood Elementary. We were running over capacity there quite a while. And we've just, it's one of 11 schools that we just put a wing on. So I think unless there are any questions about this or the other two sheets for middle and high school, I'll just move along and conclude my presentation. I think that this is good information for us to have over time, and the local government planning staffs can have it and reference it. It's the sort of thing that may be beneficial when writing your own staff reports. Things don't need to go to DCA like they did before, but the planning requirement is still there in the legislation, and so I think this is good information for the staffs to have as you all have proposed land use changes. And that's all I have for this. Well, thank you for mentioning that. Again, as I've done in the past, so a direct answer to your question is no, it's not attributable to those, because these numbers, I did these calculations after taking out age-restricted communities. So that doesn't mean, though, that there aren't, you know, areas that are predominantly retirees that are. I haven't been able to identify and therefore take out as age-restricted communities per se. We also, another thing that we know is that birth rates are at their lowest in 100 years. So these trends are all going down. Any other questions? Ms. Rich? The only reason, ma'am, is that it's a magnet school and it doesn't have an attendance boundary. So the kind of analysis that I did, it would be the sum total of all of these numbers. The as a magnet school, it draws from the entire county or the entire district.
Is NH Jones a magnet school?
Yes, in part. It has an attendance area, so it's a hybrid. And MTI, if we look at the high school, MTI is the same thing. MTI draws from all over the entire county or district. So, thank you for mentioning that. I overlooked pointing it out.
All right. Questions? Thank you,
Chairman, continuing on the agenda, the next item we discuss is legislative changes. As I alluded to earlier, the changes to the Growth Management Act eliminated the requirement to have a public schools facilities element. We all, Marion County and the cities within Marion County, have adopted a public schools facilities element into their comprehensive of plans. Although you're not required to have a public school facilities element, the law still requires you to have an interlocal agreement in place. The law also eliminates concurrency for schools and requires that the local government has no option but to consider proportionate share when it comes to school impact. What staff is asking is for some direction or concurrence on whether or not to amend our comprehensive plans to eliminate that public school facilities element or keep it. And if you eliminate the public school facilities element, it is quite possible that we can achieve the same goals and objectives by utilizing the interlocal agreement. So staff wanted to put that subject on the table for some potential discussion of consensus and or direction.
Jimmy, ladies and gentlemen, we had a discussion what are the pros and cons to us not necessarily having it as an element? I mean, obviously, I would think not having it as an element would be that we don't have to do a comprehensive, we don't have to do a comp plan change every time they want to do something. If we have it in our interlocal agreement, it would seem like to me it would remove a layer of bureaucracy or, you know, some layer of just another piece of something that we have to go through. If the interlocal agreement is strong enough, I'm for one would say, you know, unless somebody can give me a better, you know, I for one would say, why don't we take it out of the comp plan, but can, you know, obviously we have to have the interlocal agreement. We can work on that and make sure all the elements are in there that meet everybody's need. So that would be...
You're exactly correct, Mr. Chairman. You wouldn't have to go through the rather long process, although it's been shortened. You wouldn't have to go through the rather long process of amending your comp plan to change the concurrence of service areas or any policies that govern how you deal with schools. So you're exactly right on that point. And I believe staff of various cities would agree that we could probably accomplish our goals in the interlocal agreement.
Jimmy, could we... under the interlocal agreement, would we update that interlocal once a year?
You could update it once a year, or how often you put in that agreement you want to update it.
So basically, because the interlocal then would just be a contract between everybody, and so we can write anything in there or take anything out or whatever as long as everyone's in agreement on that.
That's correct.
Is there any comment?
I think that was, yes, that was the last time.
Mr. Chairman, I would echo your comments. I would rather have a interlocal agreement rather than being included in the comp plan. You know, and I'm sure we all sit around here and pray for growth that this will be a problem. So, but yeah, I think it makes much more sense to have it, like you said, that your local agreement can be changed.
Mr. Ernst, do you want to weigh in and see if that you guys okay with that? Okay. Sounds like there's a consensus, I think, that that we'll do away with that as an element in our comp plan, and then, but there we do need to update the interlocal agreement. So, Jimmy, how long will it take you all to do that?
I'd have to get with my counterparts and see. I don't think they're from here.
60 days?
No.
90?
By the end of the year, we could have a draft.
Early 2012, we could have a workshop, another workshop,
yeah,
to discuss the elements of the. Is that agreeable?
Yeah. I think that one thing.
No Christmas break for you, Mr. Hurley.
I'm not daunted by the work, but I was just thinking that the concurrency, just, you know, it's not affecting anything in a down market, which we unfortunately have. You know, doing this in a very quick fashion, I don't think it's going to have any different results. But yeah, we'll do that. Jimmy was saying, you know, we'll work on it and get a draft by the end of the year.
I guess it's been 4 years. It'll be 4 years that we haven't, you know, looked at the agreement. So that's my only concern. Is I think we should try to, in light of we're gonna remove this from our comp plan as an element of our comp plan. I mean, I think that's the bigger issue is we're taking that out. So I think we need to all have some confidence. And we won't do that until we have this joint workshop in January, and then we'll do that later. And then proportionate share would be part of that. I think would be part of that entire discussion.
David wanted to bring to your attention the status of elementary school B or five?
B.
B. Okay. Yes.
Before we move to elementary B, and we were talking about, you know, what we're bringing in, and I just wanted to, does everyone have a copy of that?
Yes.
On page 9, section 5. There's a paragraph there about our school site selection, significant innovations, and potential to approach it. And just based on an article that appears in Ohio Star Banner that the school board was looking at, section elementary school, Anthony and Clark. So, in this particular local agreement, it does bring up that the school board would establish a public school advisory committee, and that would be made up of members of the school government. So, with that said, I didn't know if, with, we have a school site selection for elementary B, of course, going to talking about this presentation, but we all know with proceeding forward with the economy, school districts are staffed, are strapped with funding. We don't want to close schools. I think that is very collective, like we said, we don't want to close schools. And I just felt like this is the time we had everyone here from our local government that we want to have a comment on moving forward, if there should be a committee form, if we're not, if this board, if we're not even looking at closing schools, then that would be necessary. But I just wanted to, because it did appear in the newspaper, I just didn't know if anyone wanted to have any comments.
Are there any comments on that issue? And I'm assuming that you'd like for that to stay in the interlocal agreement that's brought back in January, because at some point in the future you're thinking that you would like to trigger that possibly. That. And then again, it's there, I think it says that y'all just have school board.
Well, we're still quite a ways away from it.
That's fine. But that's your discretion when you want to do this. Any other comments? Mr. Lane.
Chairman, I'm not going to be elected.
It's okay, Fred.
Yes,
as long as you'll be close to one of these microphones here, please, just so that it'll be on the record.
I represented the city of Bellevue when we were negotiating this interlocal agreement, and you're talking about something with this advisory committee that was kind of a hot issue during that, because with the concurrency requirement and also with the requirement regarding the extension of facilities, infrastructure such as water and sewer service, there's a big impact on small cities. We were very interested in having someone with some input when you cite schools, because when you cite a new school and pick the cheapest piece of property, frequently it's the cheapest because it has no infrastructure and no facilities. And then you turn to governments, and particularly it's hurtful when it's a small city, and ask us to extend the water and sewer, and then we get into, well, you're only going to pay for what you need for your own use. And sometimes it's very impractical to extend a small line just for you, and the city can't afford to make it a big line. And so we wanted to have input into where you site new schools. So this committee wasn't just to talk about if you were going to close a school, but we wanted to be involved in picking the school site, at least so you would hear from us. Now, I will tell you that the city of Bellevue has no complaint, because the school board at this point, because the school board has been very good about talking to our public works director and involving us in the process. But if the thought is that you're going to do away with this committee because you're not thinking about closing schools, we want to be involved also in the selection of the school site when you build a new school too. And I'm saying I'm not complaining, and I don't want you to take it that way. I'm just saying we didn't just view this as being involved in closing schools. We wanted to be involved in siting new ones because it's potentially very, very expensive, particularly to the small community.
Thank you, Mr. Lant. I think that, again, I think this will be left in any interlocal agreement. We'll leave it in, and thank you for your comments. I think they were very relevant to the discussion.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, if I may, the Public School Advisory Committee, so the PSAC, I believe it was a couple of years ago at this meeting, we had some dialogue and talked about doing it, appointing on an ad hoc, and then also about involving the parties, making it voluntary, the participation. So, for example, kind of segueing into our next item, and talking about elementary school B, it happens to be it's in the county's jurisdiction, but it's in Bellevue's service area, the jurisdiction there. So when it comes down to appointing a committee, it makes good sense to have generally the city of Ocala represented or any of the local governments that would like to be. But if it's not going to affect them, then maybe they don't want to participate. So I might be mistaken in, you know, that we had that dialogue, but I think that's the way the discussion was. So at the time when we're needing to do that, then we would get the committee together and see who wants to participate. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'll segue off of using elementary school B to get into our next discussion. We thought it would be very beneficial, since this is one of the few avenues that we get all the local governments together to talk to you about a subject that we've all discussed in putting together our conference plans, and that's joint planning. There are some issues associated with joint planning that the staff think we need to explore, pretty confident we need to explore, and we want to get some consensus from the local governments to move forward. Just as an example, annexation. Frequently we the county get notices of annexation from the various local governments. Staff looks at those annexations and basically determines if it's within the utility service area of that particular municipality, and we sign off on it. What we don't get is any information on what else or who will provide the number of services that's required to service that piece of property, such as fire, who's going to maintain the roads. We know about the water and sewer. So we were thinking that it may be prudent to pursue a joint planning agreement to address those issues typically associated with annexation, so that the citizens and or citizens know who will be actually providing those services other than central water and sewer services. Also, the staff of the various local governments feels that we need to look at the utility service areas themselves. For example, we have one in place with the city of Bellevue. I think it's the new one's been in place maybe 2 years now. We have not, there's some agree, disagree, we have not set up a utility service area with the city of Dunellen, and we think we need to explore that. The city of Ocala's utility service area, correct me if I'm wrong, expires in 2016. I think there's a requirement that they inform us 24 months prior to that. We've had some preliminary discussions with city staff about their intent and the avenues that they can pursue, but we don't want to wait till the last minute. We do need to get on the same page with this proportionate share issue. For example, if one municipality decides to keep, or if one municipality of the county decides to keep concurrency and the municipality of the county doesn't have concurrency, then it could have a negative impact on one or the other. So we all need to be playing by the same rules when it comes to this proportionate share issue. We need to discuss an interlocal and joint planning on infrastructure plans. Using School B as an example, David and I were talking. I don't have a pointer. Why don't you explain that?
Okay. Let me get to this. I just wanted to make a couple of points, and then I'll get catch back up with Jimmy's remarks there. Regarding School B, it took us a couple of years, took us a while to get it. We've closed on it within the past couple of months, and we also, as of this past Monday night, have gotten through the Zoning Commission. We're on the consent agenda there, so our special use permit is that far next stop to the County Commission. We have a site sketch prepared for that. Very briefly, the legislation allows or permits school boards to do their own on-site planning. So one of the relevant aspects is the off-site, an interlocal agreement or an agreement to do off-site infrastructure planning, roads, water, sewer, sidewalks, streets, any of that. So that starts to get back to what Jimmy was saying. And the last thing I would throw out about the site before going deeper into this infrastructure and joint planning discussion is that I believe we're looking at this point to open Elementary V in August of 2013. Elementary V is to relieve overcrowding, which still exists at Greenway here and Bellevue Santos over here. I'm missing the star somewhere. But so Bellevue Santos and Greenway Elementaries are overcrowded. So we purchased recently, or the school board purchased this 27 acres here. Previously, this is an old slide, we had been looking at 66 acres. We have to work, the school board, public schools has to work with City of Bellevue and get an agreement to tie into water and sewer that's in Summercrest subdivision here to the south. We could also, there's an option to tie in at Baseline to the east. One of the things I said to Jimmy that we talked about is this is a relatively short route here. We know that it's approximately a half mile to 0.6 mile, and we have a fair idea of our costs now. I'm going to a meeting this afternoon. We're starting preliminary meetings on the school site and its further and its development. These are large lots in here and relatively no opportunity for other hookups or connections to that. There's the potential the school board wouldn't want to spend any more money than their least, you know, their least measures approach, but there's a potential or an opportunity that it could go to the east. I don't know if there's any other funding sources. This is a bad time, I acknowledge, but just wanted to identify the opportunity for any kind of potential joint planning to go further to the east and connect up. An example of joint planning in that instance would be, this is in the City of Bellevue service area, but the jurisdiction to require any kind of hookups would be incumbent upon the county to write that or address it that way. So,
the bottom line is, I think what David is saying is that it would be more beneficial to the community at large to go to the east, but obviously there would be a need for additional participation in putting that infrastructure in beyond what the school board is committed to doing. So those are the kind of issues that we're talking about addressing in the joint planning agreement. I touched on some other issues. We There's always a question about who maintains the various roads when the properties are annexed, et cetera, et cetera. So taking advantage of having all of our local government representatives here, staff wanted to just throw that idea out, pursuing joint planning agreement, and get some feedback and some input from our local bosses.
Jimmy, I mean, from my point of view, I think it only makes sense that we do joint planning. And, you know, site B, I mean, it's a great, good one to talk about because obviously the city of Bedford and the city of Bellevue service area. But I do know that our staff and their staffs are having some discussion about the whole baseline road line and all that stuff. So I think that, you know, we need to be participating in that discussion, especially on the utility side of it, in light of what's taking place with the city of Bellevue now. But, you know, as we look at the bigger picture, I mean, I think that obviously joint planning is needs to be done.
No, the sheriff.
So, Jimmy, you're asking to formalize, you're asking to put together a formal joint planning agreement, is that what you're...
We're asking that the various staff be directed to start drafting a formal joint planning agreement that we can all bring to our respective local governments as well as the joint body.
I think from our standpoint, Jimmy, we would say yes to that. And if you ask anybody else. Yeah, or think about it, or...
It's your world. We're just walking
well,
around.
I mean,
we appreciate it.
Well, they're in. Well, no, I think the issue is that, I mean, you know, and obviously I guess you're going to have to give some answer today, but I mean, I think the issue is that there will be other places that would then require you all to be at the table on joint planning. So, I mean, I think that's the bigger issue is do we want to try and ask our staff to coordinate some joint planning efforts, and if we're okay with that, we'll let them do that. They'll come back to the respective boards, present whatever information they have, and then we can formalize that somewhere down the road. Sure. I think everybody's comfortable with that, so you all can work city for that.
I think if I may note, the flashpoint with the city of Ocala was that utility service agreement. Obviously, they have plans to expand and need to expand, et cetera, et cetera. Those are the instances where we tend to see more enclaves through or potential enclaves. With the city of Dunellen, it's not having a formal planning boundary agreed upon. So those were sort of the flashpoints to bring into the discussion.
Jimmy, when we look at this, Section 8 of that talks about co-location and shared use.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about some different things, parks, recreational facilities, community centers, auditoriums. Obviously, those are part of the plans for the Site B. I mean, what's interesting here is that, you know, we talk about parks and, you know, citing more of those. I mean, it'd be great to be able to use some of those facilities for that. I think we do partner with you guys and the school board on some of that.
Right.
And then I really like the one about libraries. If we can consolidate libraries and use them at schools, it sounds like maybe a good plan and better resources of the government. Any answers?
Okay. I'd jump in and offer. It's something we can do. It previously was required, but I believe the recent legislation drops that requirement. I might be mistaken.
far as joint sharing, I mean...
No, I'm talking about the library.
Oh, is that, you know, if we were looking at, there was a proposal at one point to do some library closer to the shores, and if we didn't have to build a library on shores, if we could maybe use this as a co, you know, process, we're going to build one building anyway, we can help the school board with something, then we don't have to build a building, we could maybe...
Let the public use the library and have...
Yeah, that's what it says in this thing.
I think we've got a huge change in...
Well, and that might be the reason we've never done, I would assume.
Basically, it's just the law.
So we should take that language out of here.
You can't find a way to run.
Sure. Or I guess we're going to get rid of this whole language anyway? Is that what Jimmy was calling it?
Yeah. Well, they could claim that statutory language is probably not it.
There, Commissioner Zolli, there's a subtle difference between co-location and co-use. And there are some facilities that there's not a problem, like in parks and school facilities for outdoor recreation, but then there are obviously some bigger challenges when we start talking about the library use and going inside
sure.
Construction. But we can explore all those options for sure.
I just didn't know if there was actually a school that had a library that actually, you know, that the public used, if there was an actual example somewhere in the nation for that. I didn't know. I just didn't know if there was an example. I was really curious about that.
Well, we'll do some more further research, but we haven't found today.
Jimmy, we're going to schedule a joint meeting with the City of Dunellen, and so when we do, let's talk about some of the other planning. Let's make sure that's on the agenda when we talk about
okay.
It. So we're not representing here today, but we can have that discussion with them as well.
With that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes staff's plan presentation and discussion. We can try and answer any questions that any of you may have at this time.
Are there any other questions from the members? Thank you, Jimmy. There is we do have a number item four is public comment. Is there anyone in the public that would like to address the board while we're all together? Seeing none. Unless there's anything else that anybody else wants to add, we'll be adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.